Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. Since our last pod, the Browns drafted seven players and agreed to a deal with veteran safety Rodney McLeod. Here to discuss the moves, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Hey, Scott. How are you? Good to be with you. Just I'll throw it out there. Tough week for my family. That's why we're doing this on Friday, so much longer. After the draft on Monday, I lost my dad, 89 years old. So tough week, but got back to work this morning, did a tribute for him this morning on the air, and he's definitely going to be missed. And, you know, I owe him so much, and I don't want to take up a ton of time, but I just want to say this for the listeners here, because, you know, obviously the people listening here are huge sports fans, but man, he was a huge sports fan, and he's the reason I got into the business. As most people listening probably know, even though I do morning news now, used to, you know, for 11 years, I was sports anchor Channel 3 and before that in different cities. But I'm a Clevelander born and raised, and I got into sports because of my dad. Can't tell you how many games I went to at Old Municipal Stadium and, you know, with hardly anyone there, and my dad would take me down and he got me into the Cavs. And, I'm really fortunate and happy that he got to see a championship in 2016 with the Cavs, and the Indians got close. But I just wanted to throw that out there and honor my dad, Ron. And, you know, anyone that's got parents still around, you know, give them a call today, because you never know when you're going to have your last conversation.
No, that's a great point. I'm glad you said something, Chud. I would feel bad for you. I didn't get it. I wasn't up in time to watch that. I hope I can find that online, because I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I sent it out on Twitter. Oh, it's perfect. It's on Facebook. So, yeah, it's out there.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough week, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate you letting me say something here. And, you know, it's just, yeah. So, obviously, I don't think we're going to break things down to the T like we normally do, but at least we can kind of give an overview for everyone of what's been going on. And I don't know if you want to start with the draft, or do you want to start with the recent news?
Yeah, let's do McLeod real quick.
Okay.
I just think it's an important signing, and it ties into the draft. We talked ahead of time, right? Safety was a big need. They have Juan Thornhill, Grant Delpit, and then a couple of undrafted rookies from a year ago, DeAnthony Bell and Bubba Bolton, and that wasn't going to be enough, right? You can't have your safety position, you know, submarine by one injury. So when they didn't draft somebody and it was kind of a weak safety draft class, you figured they'd sign somebody in free agency, and McLeod makes all the sense in the world. Been in the league for 11 years. It started, I think, 138 games. Started 15 last year with the Colts, so it's not like he's been sitting on the bench for a long time. He played a bunch last year, and he spent 5 years in Philly with Jim Schwartz. Won a Super Bowl together with the Eagles in that 2017 season. So I think it'll be great to help Schwartz, you know, implement his style of defense, his scheme, and just kind of adjust, help guys adjust to Schwartz, right? If there's any adjustment period there with his personality, with his style of coaching, I think McLeod's the guy to do it. And if you read stuff from the Philly days, Schwartz just raved about McLeod.
Well, there you go. You got the connection, right? So, yeah. And you touched on this. I mean, this was the spot where they didn't hit in the draft that maybe some people thought they might, right?
Right, right. I think linebacker was the other one. And we'll see what they do there. Maybe they feel better about the guys coming off injuries, and maybe they don't feel that's a huge need at linebacker, but I think that's something to keep an eye on. But yeah, safety was one, because I don't think they could have gone into the season, let alone training camp, with the safety roster they had. So they had McLeod, three guys they trust. They like DeAnthony Bell's speed, especially on special teams. You know, and the thing is, McLeod's been a starter. So, you know, we haven't talked to him yet. I assume he's going to be the third guy because, you know, Delpit was a second-round pick. They obviously signed Juan Thornhill to a big contract in free agency, so he's starting. So I expect McLeod to be that third guy, and he can fill in at both spots. You know, I don't know how much dime – Jim Schwartz is going to want to run with the three safeties, but you have to have that third guy.
So let's go back to the draft. Quiet in the first round, obviously, because they didn't have a pick. And we actually even talked about that, because the last time we talked was last Friday. before rounds two and three. No pick in the second round. Then in the third round, we know that receiver was a position they still wanted to add to, but were you surprised they went receiver in the third round with what we knew they needed on the defensive side?
A little bit, Chud. I was. And I think there's a couple important things to remember. Number one is when you're not picking till 74, I don't know if you can chase need, right? You probably should never chase need in the draft. But, you know, if you're picking eight, you can take the best player X position you need. He's going to come in and start, right? It's 74. I just don't think you have that luxury. So I think that's part of it. Andrew Berry wants to always be flexible, you know, number two. So it's how does the draft fall to him? And you have to look into the future a little bit. And I think the Cedric Tillman pick at number 74 kind of speaks to all of those things. Now, I don't know if you could say they were set at receiver, but you could certainly look at the receiver position ahead of the draft and say Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Elijah Moore, Marquise Goodwin, and David Bell, right? That's five guys, and David Bell's a third-round pick from a year ago. I don't know if it screams you need to add someone. But if you really like Tillman, it's a premium position, and the Browns recognize that, and they like to draft guys, especially early, that play premium positions, whether it's defensive end, cornerback, receiver, offensive tackle. Those are, you know, kind of some premium positions that they want to address with their top resources. They like his size. They think that adds an element to their receiving core. He becomes the tallest guy, at least among the guys that I just mentioned. And, you know, down the road, after 2023, things become a little less certain with that receiving group. Cooper's, you know, making a bunch of money. He'll have a big cap number again. Peoples-Jones is in the last year of his rookie contract and has played well, where he's probably going to get a pretty good contract. Do the Browns pay that, or do they let Tillman develop this year and then step in to one of those spots? I don't think that's crazy to think like that. And Andrew Berry always thinks like that, right? He's thinking about the present and the future. He's talked about having one foot in each kind of tense, so to speak. So I think that's why it made sense. Now, the question is, you know, you draft the guy as your first pick, even though it's the third round, where does he fit this year? You know, he seems to be, to me, fourth or fifth on the depth chart. But will he get the reps? Will he take some of Peoples-Jones' reps when we get to the games? And obviously, it's way too early to tell. But I think that's something interesting to watch.
Yeah, you hit on it, the size. They don't have a guy that with his exact size, so I'm sure that stood out. But also, you can't have too many weapons here when you're going to try to get Deshaun Watson in this offense going. And while I agree with you that I can't remember exactly how you said it, but you could say they're almost set at receiver. Mm-hmm. But at the same point, though, it's not like you're sitting there with like two number ones or a definite. I mean, Amari Cooper's great, but is he elite? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if he is or not. I guess what I'm saying is, while it might be set, it's far from perfect.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, Chad. I do. Can they get better? Yeah, certainly. And I think they believe Tillman gives them that possibility, whether it's in 2023 or down the road, the ability to just be better, right? And if a guy gets hurt, do you like him better than David Bell stepping into a bigger role? I think the answer is yes. Now, I'm not giving up on David Bell, but there's nothing separates David Bell, right? He doesn't have a special trait. I thought he was just average a year ago, where Tillman doesn't run super fast. I think he's a 4 or 5 guy, but he's got the size that, like we said, it's unique to this receiver group. So I think that sets him apart. He's probably as fast or faster than Bell, who's not as big as Tillman is. So, I think it definitely has the potential to be an upgrade at some level of the depth chart with more potential to come.
We're not going to be able to go over every single guy, but I do want to highlight a couple and stick in the third round with pick number 98. And help me out here. I want to make sure that – have you practiced the pronunciation? Do you
have
it down?
Yeah.
Is it Siaki?
Siaki Ika.
Siaki Ika. All right. I was on it. All right. Thoughts on this guy? First thought is obviously a big boy, right? 6'3", 335?
Big fella. And 335 is probably the low bar, you know. That's what we weighed in at the combine. But then a couple weeks later at the pro day, he was 347. He played above 350 at Baylor. Now, he said he wants to play at about 335, 340, I think is where he wants to get down to. Well, anytime a guy is that big, right, you have to worry about the weight. So that's something to monitor with him, especially with the jump from the combine to the pro day. Can he be at the weight that he wants to be at, that the Browns want him to be at, want him to play at? That's going to be important. To me, what jumps out at you, besides the size, is the focus on improving the run defense. And Andrew Berry didn't want to make a big deal about that and said, hey, they want their D tackles to be attacking. They're not going to be playing two gap. But the fact is, they were undersized at that position last year. And adding Ika and signing Dalvin Tomlinson to the 4-year, $57 million free agent deal adds a ton of size in the middle of the defense. And the hope is that that leads to better run defense, because it certainly wasn't good enough last year. Now, Barry, I found it fascinating. He said, hey, Jim Schwartz wants to stop the run with numbers. It's not about having those huge guys in the middle. But then why add those two huge guys in the middle, right? Like, there's guys that are quicker you could get to play D-tackle. I think it was a little, I don't want to say disingenuous, but I just have a hard time kind of rectifying or, you know, kind of making that work in my head is, okay, you sign and draft two really big guys and act like that's not part of the formula. I think it is. I think that's just the reality of it. Now, the last point on Ika to me is, will he and Dalvin Tomlinson play together? I don't know if he's just a backup to Tomlinson or they envision a front four, right? First and second down run downs where it's 335-pound Ika and 320-pound Tomlinson. I think that would be interesting, because I don't know if they give you the burst, and maybe they do. Maybe once Ika gets on the field and Tomlinson, you'll see that they can really penetrate. But I just think that dynamic is interesting. Or will it be Tomlinson and Jordan Elliott or Perrion Winfrey with Ika serving in the rotation?
Now, he can get to the quarterback too, can he? I mean, are we talking about a guy who can help us in the sack game?
Well, I mean, that's they believe he has that capability, right? And I don't want to rule that out, because a guy that big can do it. You look at Vita Vea in Tampa, right? And that's a guy that Ika kind of looks up to, models his game after. So, but that's a rare trait, right? For a guy to be 330 plus to be able to get to the quarterback. You just don't see that a ton. So I guess I'm, you know, you always say I need to see it to believe it. That's kind of where I am. That's kind of where I am with Ika, is I need to see him on the field show that he has that burst, that penetration, where he's not just an early down run stopper, right? And the Browns believe he has that explosion in him, and maybe he does. I just see a guy, you know, you look at his combine, and he's, you know, he's got the big gut. It's hanging out of his shirt. I guess I have a hard time reconciling, okay, that with getting the quarterback. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I still think when they go to pass rush situations, it's going to be three ends and a lighter D tackle, not Ika.
I need to get that on a T-shirt, you know, that quote,
There's some companies that do that around here.
Yeah, there's just a few, right? So how about this pick in the fifth round going quarterback?
Yeah, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. UCLA, he's about 6'2". You know, the things that jump out at me, Chud, is first of all, he's highly prolific at UCLA. Threw for more than 10,000 yards. Ran for 28 touchdowns in his career. You know, if you watch his highlights, they're really impressive, right? A big playmaker, can throw it down the field. I saw an interview with Jordan Palmer, the former quarterback in the league. Now he's a quarterback coach. He works for the 33rd team, that, you know, the website with the old, former GMs and stuff. And he really liked this kid. Before the draft, he thought he could come in and kind of be a guy that he could see turning into a starter. So it's interesting. Now, he's got a similar skill set to Deshaun Watson. Again, Andrew Berry said, hey, we're looking for the best player. That's not the reason we took DTR. But I think it helps, right, that they have a similar skill set. You're not going to have to change your offense if and when he's the backup and he needs to play, similar to Joshua Dobbs. being the backup, right? Now, I don't think Dobbs is as good as Jacoby Brissett. So given the choice, I think the Browns would take Brissett as their backup. So I understand that philosophy. But I think there is something to be said for having similar skill sets in your quarterback position. I talked to Thompson Robinson's quarterback coach at UCLA this week, and I haven't written the story yet, but I will. I think Ryan Gunderson. And, you know, he spoke highly of him. To me, what was something interesting is he talked about how Thompson Robinson likes to hurdle guys. And if you watch his film, it's out there. And one thing is interesting, he hurdles guys and then he lands on his feet and keeps going, right? Which you don't see a lot. And it shows incredible athleticism. But it's also one of the things where, you know, you're trying to talk him into playing smart and not subjecting yourself to injury. And I think it was a little bit of a, not a battle, but a compromise there to let him be this playmaker, but also protect himself because he left himself open to some shots. Now, he stayed healthy and he played a bunch of games. But there is a dynamic element to this guy. And he's also confident. He talked about taking the reins from Deshaun Watson. Not this year, but he wasn't like, hey, I'm going to sit behind him forever. He's like, okay, when I take the reins, you know, I'll learn for a while and then take the reins. I thought that was an interesting comment.
Can you talk more about where the quarterback room would be? I mean, how many – usually teams have two quarterbacks on their active roster. Would I mean, are we looking at a competition for the backup? Or are we looking at practice squad? Can you analyze that a little bit more?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, Chud. I think I would expect the Browns to keep three. And I think it would be Watson, Dobbs, and Thompson Robinson. Now, he has to beat out Kellen Mond, who was here a year ago, a third-round pick of the Vikings in 2021. Didn't play at all for the Browns, barely played for the Vikings. But he was on the roster all last year for the Browns, and they got a good look at him. Now, you know, I think if they assumed that he was going to be eventually the backup, then they probably don't draft DTR. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of a red flag if you're Mond thinking about, you know, your future with the team. But I think there'll be a competition there. And you're right. A lot of teams keep two. The Browns kept three last year. I would expect them to keep three this year. I don't think they want to lose Thompson Robinson to the waiver wire.
Right.
So I think they would keep three. They showed last year that they're willing to do that. So that would be my expectation.
All right. We got time for pretty much two more questions. So this one's not really a question as much as just recap the rest of the draft, the guys that we didn't talk about yet that you want to hit on, and just your overall thought of the draft.
Yeah, just to hit on a couple themes to me. The size, right? We mentioned with Ika, Tillman, Isaiah McGuire, the defensive end out of Missouri, has good size. DeJuan Jones, the tackle from Iowa State, he's 6'8", 375. So, you know, he might have been the biggest guy in the draft. Size, there's connections, right? They draft Cam Mitchell, the Northwestern corner. He's really good friends and played corner at Northwestern with Greg Newsome. They kind of grew up together. Tillman played with the Thompson Robinson in high school in Vegas. Thompson Robinson works out with Deshaun Watson when Watson would go to L.A. So there's a lot of guys that kind of know each other. Ika played at LSU before he transferred to Baylor with Jacob Phillips and Grant Delpit and Cade York. So there's a lot of connections I found interesting. And then part of it, Tillman was one example of building toward the future, right? The center they drafted out of Ohio State in the sixth round, Luke Whippler. He's a guy that says, okay, maybe he replaces Nick Harris as the backup center this year if he makes the team, beats him out. And then a couple years from now, can he take over for Ethan Poston? DeJuan Jones, the big tackle. Can he be the swing guy this year or at least one of the swing backups? And then is he going to take over for Jedrick Wills or Jack Conklin a couple years down the road? Right? Like, you can kind of see the vision of where these guys might fit. And just lastly, like, I think Isaiah McGuire, the D end out of Missouri, might have the best chance to make an impact right away. Now, maybe it's Ika, right? Maybe Ika earns a starting job. Maybe he plays a bunch. But I think McGuire immediately competes for that third end spot with Alex Wright, who was a third-round pick a year ago. You have Garrett, you have Obo Okoronkwo, and then I think there's a question mark. So I think McGuire has that chance, and – you know, he's strong. He played in a bigger school than Wright did. I think he can stop the run and get to the passer. So I think there's some immediate upside to McGuire?
So I got to be honest. I think when people say they don't want to draft, give a grade to the draft, sometimes I think, well, is that because they don't want to analyze it? Or is it because they really do believe you can't really grade a draft till 3 years later? But then I also think, can you really grade a draft? Do the people that give grades to a draft do it because it's their job and they have to? I don't know. Bottom line is, I've never really understood grading a draft. I know some people have to do it. Some people don't like to do it. I'm not going to ask you to grade it, but I do want your overall thoughts.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chad. I'm not a huge grade guy because all it does is reinforce what you felt ahead of the draft, right? I like this guy ahead of the draft. They took this guy, therefore it's a good draft. It doesn't mean it's going to turn out that way. I understand why people do it. That's fine. I think it's – I would say it's a solid but unspectacular draft. And I think the reason that is you don't have picks in your first two rounds, right? I think that's the nature of it. I thought they did address some needs. I thought they took guys at important positions like we talked about. And I think there's potential for some of these guys. And, you know, like we've talked about a million times, right? The second and third day picks, you're not expecting these guys to be stars. But I think there's a potential for a few of these guys to develop into players that make significant contributions. Now, there's question marks, right? Jones, the tackle, you know, is he motivated enough? Does he like football enough? Can he maintain his weight? Like, those are questions that probably cost him being a second-round pick to when the Browns took him in the fourth round. But there's a potential there, and I think when you're picking as late as the Browns were and have the roster that they have, I'm okay taking some chances.
All right, before we go, anything you want to mention? Deshaun Watson, I got to be honest, I didn't pay a ton of attention to it this week, but he was in the news a little bit. Anything you want to hit on there?
Yeah, I'll do two quick. That and Jedrick Wills. Watson, one of the original complainants, the accusers who filed a civil lawsuit back, I don't even know, is it 18 months, 2 years ago now? It had been one of the women had not reached a settlement. She still hadn't. It had kind of been quiet for a long time. The lawyer, Tony Busby, said he was going to file a motion to try to get it on the trial docket. He intends to go to trial. Now, we have to see. They could still reach a settlement. But last time there was anything public a year ago or in August, the woman, I think it's Lauren Baxley, said she didn't want to settle because she felt like Watson had not taken any responsibility. So we'll see if this eventually leads to trial. If it does, then it becomes a much bigger story. As of now, it's still awaiting trial. We don't know when that trial would be. If it's not before the season, then it would be next offseason. But that bears watching. And then there's a separate civil lawsuit that was started last October. It's still working its way through this legal system. Watson's supposed to be deposed in that June 9th, the day after minicamp. We'll see if that happens. And then Jedrick Wills, we thought they'd pick up his fifth-year option. They did pick up his fifth-year option. The only question was why Andrew Berry wouldn't talk about it publicly. That's just something he doesn't believe in. But they did it. It's $14 million. Keeps him here for 2 years. And now he's got to prove that he's worthy of that and that he's the long-term answer because he's been inconsistent.
All right, Scott, that was down and dirty, quick compared to what we usually do, but I think we got a lot in there. I'm glad we got it in there, and we'll reset and talk again soon.
Sounds good. I really appreciate you fitting this in, Chud. I'm glad we did it, and we can talk about the roster throughout the offseason. So, and we're going to have the schedule. We think the schedule might come out Thursday. That's ESPN reported that. So that's next Thursday, May 11th. If that happens, then we'll have plenty to talk about in a couple weeks from now. So a lot going on, Chud. I can't thank you enough for doing this. The thoughts to you and your family. Hope everything goes okay over the next week. I know you got a lot of stuff going on. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. No problem, buddy. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.